It's time for the Haddit.com Radio Show. Haddit.com Radio is an in-depth look at all things VA. If you need help with the VA, log on to Haddit.com. Now, here's your host, Gerald Cooker.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, on this 26th day of August 2016. We're here today with our co-host, Jay Basser, and T-Bird has tuned in with us, so that's always nice to have her on. And today we have Dr. Bridget Cantrell. She's an award-winning PTSD expert, and we'd like to see any new things that come along that veterans can take advantage of. How you doing today, Dr. Cantrell?
I'm just wonderful, Mr. Cook, and thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Oh, we are blessed to have you, and we need to keep the membership up, and, you know, we try to keep an advised of all new and active things that's currently going on. We have so many now that do have PTSD and traumatic brain injuries also.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to keep them advised of anything that might be, you know, new that may have come on, or even old things, because it don't hurt to refresh your memories from time to time.
Yeah, and they're so and they're overlapped. The symptoms are so overlapped in certain instances. It's hard to tease it all out.
Well, yes, it is, and you know, I don't know what sort of grading system they have to what amount of severity, because this goes from nearly nothing to quite severe, and so does that's PTSD, and so does traumatic brain injuries. And I think all too many times the traumatic brain injuries being a physical injury over PTSD being a psychological injury, a lot of the doctors, unless you're dealing with, you're lucky enough to have a real expert, and that's hard to find within the VA. You might get it at Walter Reed or some other, you know, high-ranking medical facilities. But it's really a difficult decision to make.
Right. Well, they and I'm not a traumatic brain injury expert. You know, there's neurologists who will define that, but you know, they come in mild, moderate, and severe, and a lot of the severity is determined on the amount of loss of consciousness. How long did they lose consciousness? If it was, like they say, less than 30 minutes, then after the traumatic event, then it could be considered mild, and then we look at all the symptoms associated with that, and they look at the Glasgow coma scope as well. So there's specific numbers that they use, that the expert used to determine that. And moderate traumatic brain injuries entail a loss of consciousness that could be more than 30 minutes or more than 24 hours. And, of course, severe, we're looking at much more extensive, you know, loss of consciousness and amnestic kind of behaviors, and of course, what type of injury is it? You know, it could be a closed head injury too. We could have open wounds. We can have closed head injuries. So it could be anywhere from just a mild concussive injury to a severe brain injury.
Yes, I've read that on the 30-minute thing, and which at the time I read it, I just couldn't agree with it. I don't believe that's a, it might be a means of starting to understand the severity of,
yes,
of
correct,
the,
correct.
But I don't believe that they should classify it. If it was less than 30 minutes, it'd be moderate or, you know.
Well, they just, they have criteria that the professionals use to determine, because they need to classify these brain injuries, but that's not the only thing they use. I mean, they look at the cognitive deficits and the behaviors associated with those types of in those types of injuries, and they look at the severity and the of those particular, not just these criteria that I was indicating, but they're looking at the cognitive function. How well is this person functioning cognitively? And they'll do a neurological examination and determine some of that. But also a really good person to determine that are family members, the ones that are around the veterans and notice it more, because oftentimes the veteran themselves, you know, they know they're getting a little frustrated, their memory's not up to speed, they get a little confused, they may find that they're from a little bit irritable to explosive anger. Well, so the family members would be a really good indicator as to what kind of personality changes they've seen in their veteran. To also determine, so this is multifaceted. Making a diagnostic determination is multifaceted, and they do a lot of different types of tests and examinations to determine that. But like I say, I'm not an expert in traumatic brain injury.
Well, now, on PTSD, have they come up with any new rating criteria that would help them in diagnosing the severity of PTSD?
I'm not a rater. I can't discuss. I can't tell you about what the raters determine in terms of their level. Like, is it a 50%? Is it a 70%? But you know, the criteria is we look mainly at, how are they with relationships? How are they? Are they able to work? How are they with their ability to kind of manage themselves out into the public sector? What are their triggers? How do they get triggered? What is the severity of the trigger? How long does it last? So all of those things are pretty constant, but it's based on the individual and what their particular experience is. But as far as the rating decisions. I work closely with service officers in providing evaluations for veterans for them to help determine the level of severity. So I'm looking at all these social factors, like I just indicated, you know, their ability to have relationships, their ability to work, and be around people. Are they isolating? Are they drinking? Are they using drugs? Are they using addictive behaviors to self-medicate? And that can be a multitude of things that can be used in to help them stay away from whatever it is that they're trying to stay away from. It could be people, it could be events, it could be just life itself where they go inward. So I look at all of that information and look at the severity of what they're dealing with. I also do testing on them. You know, there's PTSD measures that I use to determine what is the score on this, how much exposure have they had in terms of a combat veteran. That can differ for each person. A combat veteran is going to be exposed to more direct combat activities. Is this a military sexual trauma case? Is this a person that has been assaulted on the military base or on a ship or whatever? So they may present a little bit differently. We can even have people that are back on the bases and they're in admin, but their bases or their fobs are constantly rocketed. You know, so we have to look at each individual and determine how they're functioning in the world. That's something that we need to look at with an open frame mind, because we can't just pigeonhole people and categorize them into a certain division just because we think, well, if they haven't had combat trauma, then they can't have post-traumatic stress. But you and I both know that's not a valid statement.
True.
Bridget, Teresa,
I know you have a lot of dealings with PTSD, and what has some of your experiences been?
I describe PTSD sometimes as, well, always as not my friend. And often like a snake that twirls its way around my spine and gently whispers in my ear, like a lover, to take myself away and go to sleep forever. And sometimes it pops out and screams almost like at the top of its lungs, like a hard rock song. In the early years, that was constant. And it's gotten better. I know what you mean about isolation. I spent several years living in my sister's basement, which was a windowless cement basement. It was about the only place I could feel safe.
That's right.
So, and I just cannot support you more, Bridget, on talking to the family members, because a lot of times my niece will know more about how I'm doing than I will.
Yes.
Because she's very observant, and especially if you have PTSD and you're somewhat disconnected or you disassociate, you may not realize what's going on, but if you have a good enough relationship with the family members that you can say you are more irritable without getting, and they feel safe to say that to you, that it's not going to cause an argument.
Yes.
It's or just like they're chronicling what's going on with you that you may not be aware of. It makes treatment and everything much, much better. I think it enriches the experience if you're lucky enough to have family or friends close to you.
Right, and
a
one
lot
the,
of so much
and
we
then,
don't.
Excuse, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but yes, that is so, so important, because even the words we use as family members or friends or even community members or even mental health providers or medical health providers, whatever relationship we have with these veterans, the words we use with them is critical. So if we're going to say something that sounds like we're judging them or we're putting them down, or, you know, why don't you just get over this? What's your problem? That just makes them go back into their cave, and that's when they don't feel safe.
That's absolutely correct, and they shut down. We shut down, and shutting down is a problem for a lot of us with PTSD. And once you shut down, you can't shut down if you want to get to the healing part. And the healing is there.
That's right.
It is there. It's very, very difficult to get to, but it is not impossible.
That's right. I had a man the other day who is not a veteran, but he had some very traumatic experiences, and he just said, I'm damaged. I feel like I'm damaged. And to me, I think that word is just such a, it's painful for me to hear that. I said, no, I said, you are not damaged. I said, all of our lives are like a big, beautiful weaving. And we've got different threads and yarns and textures, and some of those threads are really ugly, and some of them are painful. But we can't pull them out and be selective on which ones we keep. because that would compromise the integrity of this beautiful weaving. I said, so you have to embrace everything about what has happened in your life and turn it around and look at what have I learned about myself? What have I been able to share with other people? How has this fortified me and kept me going in a positive direction? And sometimes it's very hard for people to get to that point, but that's part of the healing process, is embracing that which we fear or that which we don't like about ourselves or that we don't like what we did or what happened to us. We have to embrace it because it's what's brought us to this point right now.
That's right, to where we are right now. And I, if I could just share a short conversation I had with a veteran who was also had PTSD from Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
and he was a member on the forum. I met him for coffee. We'd never met before. And we talked and shared our trauma experience. And he said to me, he goes, I don't know if I could have gone on if I was you, which is exactly how I felt about him.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, I said, I've had to go to the hospital. I've been suicidal. I said, but, you know, if I hadn't gone to the hospital,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be here. And if I wasn't here, I wouldn't be having coffee with you.
That's right.
Because you would have never found the website, because the website would have never been created.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I find meaning in that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That I and for some years that I truly, truly struggled, I know it sounds strange, but in a lot of ways I'm very thankful for those years.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you're stripped down to just nothing is left, it gives you a better view of what you are at your base.
Yes.
And allows you to incorporate from your experience into what you rebuild from that point.
Mm-hmm. It really reaches. I mean, these are wounds of the soul.
They are.
No matter what kind of wounds they are, whatever happened to these people, to all of us, to whatever, these are wounds of the soul. They reorganize our lives in a way that we didn't even think was possible. It allows us to see ourselves from a different perspective. Like you're saying, it's a different vantage point. You can rebuild based on, wow, I survived that. I didn't think I was going to, and I didn't want to. I didn't want to be here, but somehow I got to the hospital. I made a social support system of other people like me, or providers that I trusted, or got in touch with the core of my essence. Maybe it's a faith-based, or maybe it's, you know, going outside in nature and just being still with nature. It brings us to the point of being so authentic.
That is very true, Bridget. I couldn't agree more. And I think sometimes that when we talk about the struggle and everything, we just can't say enough to people that there is hope. There
mm-hmm.
is hope. There is healing. Now, you may never forgive and you may never forget, but you can heal.
That's right. And heal is an interesting word, too, because I say, you know, there's no cure. It's like breaking your arm. You know, you've broken it, it's pinned, you've got all this titanium rods and whatever, and the scar is pretty much healed. But you know what? If you tweak that arm, or the weather changes or something, you're going to be reminded that that arm was once, you know, it was injured, it was wounded at one point. But it's still it's functional. But it's like you said, it's something that never leaves. It's like the gift that keeps on giving. And you never know when it's going to give you a big
right.
boost, right? Because maybe
I
you're going to be triggered
in therapy many times.
watching the news, or maybe you roll up onto a motor vehicle accident, or whatever it is, and it just hits you so deeply that you start having these automatic responses that actually are survival responses. I think of the criterion of PTSD, and I think of the hypervigilance, the startle response, and the quick assessment of things, and how things slow down, like slow motion. And it, I mean, I'm sure many of us have been in situations like that. But you know, it really those are survival skills. They're just a new set of skills that help us function at a higher level.
That is true. They're very primitive. You know,
yes.
They're
reptilian. I look at it as like I think of us like a Pez container, and how you know that when you want that little candy, the little helmet comes up and out comes the little candy. Well, that's what happens to us when we're triggered by a trauma, or our lives feel threatened, or we see something horrific, or whatever it is. Our brains have no discernment. We don't think, we don't rationalize. We are just at that bottom base of that Pez container where the lid opens, the top part's no longer intact, and we're merely on animal behavior. It's, you know, that's that flee and flight and fear responses that we get with those adrenaline rushes. And that's why it's a reaction rather than a response. So when I'm working with people, I say we need to work on having a response to something rather than being so reactive. But reactive is first nature to a veteran, right? It's like that's
right.
What kept them alive, kept you guys all alive. You're here right now. You're listening to this radio station. But we've got to work on it, we've got to put a little bit of pause in there. So there's a response. It's a little slower reaction rather than just primal. It's like, okay, that was a car screeching, or that was a firework or something like that. Okay, I can calm myself down. And it's very interesting how our bodies automatically put ourselves into survival mode.
Well, and I think, you know, after, one trauma, two, three,
mm-hmm.
and I talk about it being a switch that becomes faulty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's great if you have total control over when you switch it on and switch it off, but at some point you don't really.
No, you don't.
And
it's like a kindling effect, too. Like you mentioned, 1, 2, 3 trauma, 4 traumas. Post-traumatic stress has a kindling effect. It's like dominoes. And so it's not like, it's kind of all kind of melds together. And I think of it like, too, as like you mentioned, like a snake going up around your neck and,
right.
You know, whispering in your ear or screaming in your ear. I think of it like a piece of cable that's twisted. And there's a physiological reaction, like we're talking about the hypervigilance, the reactivity, all of that. And then there's the emotional, the psychological component, where we have the numbing, we have the anger, we have the lashing out, we have the separation from people because we don't want to lose them again. I'm not going to get close to anyone. I'm not going to hurt like that again. And so we have to try to unwind that cable and soften that connection so that we can start working on the physiological arousal system as well as the psychological arousal system.
Right, and we need to learn, and I tell you, it's a lot like they say about how do you get to Carnegie Hall, practice.
Mm-hmm.
It, the same way with PTSD, how do you get better? Practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes,
I got to practice taking a beat before I react if I'm angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, recognizing, I have an inappropriate amount of anger for the given situation when I want to smash somebody's face in.
Yeah,
you know?
Do it. Thinking about it and visualizing it and go, I know how I want to do this, is a lot different than actually doing it. It's a step away, right?
Right. And the beginning it didn't work that often, and, you know, now it, you know, works a lot better, but I still have my moments. But practice, practice, practice.
Yeah, practice and actually, you know, getting outside the box. We all have a safety, a place of safety. Internally, around us, we have a personal space of safety. And I always want my people to walk outside that box. If you don't like going to a mall, well, go to the parking lot and sit in the parking lot. And then go home and recharge your batteries. And maybe the next time you can maybe go in the front door where you can get out really quickly. So it's like what we call a successive approximation. It's like if we're teaching, wanting our little children to put their shoes on, and they put their little shoe on, and the sole is facing up to the ceiling, we're going to celebrate the fact that they were able to know that their foot goes in that little shoe. And we're going to celebrate every little baby step. And it's the same thing with post-traumatic stress. We want to celebrate every little baby step that gets us further out from this isolation and avoidance and this, you know, these basements with no windows. That served its purpose. And it was a sense of safety and protection. But we've got to get out when we're ready, out into the world a little bit.
Right, and even if you just can make it to the parking lot, like you said,
mm-hmm.
and stay 5 minutes and come home,
mm-hmm.
that is a success.
It is.
It doesn't matter if maybe the people around you might not think that's a success. That is a success. And the more you do it, then you have this experience built up that you can say, well, I came here and I sat and nothing happened. I came here, I sat and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience starts to weigh the other side of, oh my God, when I leave my house, something terrible happens.
That's right. It's the words we use, right? It's our beliefs. It's what the cognitions are and the way we do, what kind of self-talk do we use? Which one's going to weigh out? Which one's going to survive? And there's Native American little prophecies that grandfather says, which one are you going to feed? Well, we're going to try to feed the positive one, the one that wants life, the one that wants to be more engaged, the one that wants to move forward and not be stuck in the past. And we cannot say, I know there's some therapists that say, well, you know, we don't talk about the past. Well, you know what? Like I said before, it's like a big weaving. It's a mosaic. Everything that we've experienced in life has led us to this moment in time. And we cannot just shove that aside, whether it's, you know, I hear horrible, horrible stories and very painful stories of veterans' experiences. But you know what? There's something out of that, you know, whatever it was, there's something that has allowed them to grow from those experiences, no matter how painful.
Yes, and there are... we see stories all the time about it, but there are tens of thousands of stories of people who have successfully created a new life for themselves
mm-hmm.
that they didn't think was possible when they were first diagnosed or first started experiencing symptoms. Even if you are a vet who has PTSD and in order to find help, you've reached out to drugs or alcohol to self-medicate yourself from the pain, even if it's been years or decades, there is still help available for you.
Absolutely. And that's more common, you know, than people want to think. You know, unfortunately, it's something that is readily available. And even if you've gone down that road, there's ways to start moving in a different direction and moving away from that kind of coping.
That's right, and there are people who believe in you and who will help you.
Mm-hmm, very much so.
And there are others who have done it. And there are many things that can help you with PTSD besides drugs, besides talk therapy, although I'm a big believer in both. But
yes.
There's pets.
Mm-hmm.
There's service dog. I have a PTSD service dog. She's been a great help to me.
Wonderful. They're an extension of life, aren't they?
They really are.
Mm-hmm.
They really
beautiful.
Are.
It's a beautiful. That is beautiful medicine. I have several of my vets that have their service animals, and when they come into my office, all bets are off. The dogs are on my lap. I mean, because they're not working when they come into my office, so they get
That's
to play.
Right.
And but the, they're so amazing, and they're so intuitive, and they're so skilled in helping their veteran or their civilian really engage in life on a much deeper level.
Yeah, right, and feel on a much deeper level.
That's right, and they're safe. They're and what's better than an animal? They give us unconditional love. They don't ask for anything. All they want is food and a snuggle here and there, and to be feel safe. And we get so much in return for giving them those qualities.
That's right. So you can even help. When if I'm having a panic attack and I'm trying to do my breathing to calm down, but I can't quite get it, I just hold on to her and then start breathing with her as I feel her breathe and I feel her heartbeat. And it kind of is like grounding.
Absolutely.
So,
that's like when
I mean,
they tell you to put a little alarm clock in a puppy's little bed.
Right.
That it's that repetition. It's that, and then it's like you've got this animal in front of you that it kind of paces you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she's a service dog, so she can go to wherever I go, she can go.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you don't, your PTSD isn't that severe that you need a dog to go with you everywhere. Even just getting a dog or a pet. Or getting involved in equine therapy with horses. I've talked to a lot of vets who've got a lot out of that. There are nature resorts and there's so much. It's a very, the treatment for PTSD is rich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just have to find what works for you.
Right.
And I'm involved
and,
in equine therapy, and we meet once a month. It's for veterans and their families, and we have a big potluck, and all these vets come out with their children or their spouses, and all we do, we ride around in the arena with the dogs, and I have a Igala therapist out there, and it's just amazing. And, when we look at the horses, and I've had horses, you look at that relationship. You have to earn that relationship with that animal. And I look at my vets. Some of them are, big and scary and all this stuff, but I'm just saying that's how they appear, but we know they aren't. But anyway, they come in there looking like that, and I think of a horse, and they're big and they're scary and they weigh 1,200 pounds, and, they could run over you in a heartbeat. But really, on the inside, this horse is a prey animal. They're vulnerable. They're very, very sensitive, and they're constantly scanning their perimeter and looking for the next shoe to drop. And that's like our veterans are.
That's so much
inside.
Is.
What's that?
That so much is.
Yeah, it's like a real comparison. And our veterans are—they're big and scary on the outside, maybe some of them, but on the inside, they're tender, they're wounded, they're hurting, they're fearful, they're saying, "Oh my goodness, if you only knew what I've done, where I've been, what I had to do to get back here, I don't think you'd love me. I don't think you'd find me lovable." And so sometimes those scripts that are written that we say in our minds, we project onto other people. And so that's why it's so important for everybody who's around us and who's listening to these programs. We have to learn how to reach out and bring people in closer to us because our veterans need us. Our people need us to be a community to support them so that they can live a better quality life.
I think we can all agree with that, Bridget.
Mm-hmm. We all need that.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take over the conversation. John, Gerald, do you have questions for Bridget?
Well, what I need to do is give out our phone number in case we have someone out there that'd like to call in.
Do it.
Mm-hmm.
Our phone number in case anyone out there has a question or comment. for our guest speaker. The number is 347-237-4819. Now, that call-in number, once again, is 347-237-4819. And then when you get in there, you'll get a recording, and just hit one. We'll put you right in here in the queue with us, and we'll be able to talk to you. So feel free to call in if you have a question or a comment. Bridget, I know you've written several books because you've sent me some. you want to discuss your books a little bit here?
Oh, I'd be happy to. I wrote the first book that I wrote with Chuck Dean, who is from the 173rd Airborne Vietnam Vet, and he's an author, and we wrote this book together called Downrange to Iraq and Back. And that, it talks about the basic, their stories and of combat trauma in there and different military experiences. And what I'm all into is normalizing these experiences so people don't feel like they're so far out there by themselves and that there's something majorly wrong with them. And so this book normalizes all these things. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling this way, and these other people have gone through this, and I'm not totally nuts. I'm okay. Yes, you are okay. So that's what Downrange to Iraq and Back is about. Is about what it's like to be exposed to some of these experiences, and how that affects a person, and how it changes their view about what's their assumptions about life, death, meaning, purpose, and all of that stuff. And then the second book is called Once a Warrior Wired for Life, which I also wrote with Chuck. And that's more like, okay, so now I have been in the military. I have experienced all these things. Now, how do I come home and transition from being a warrior or a military person to coming back into the civilian sector? How do I do this and do it in a good way so that it's more successful and I can be more effective and feel like I fit in? Because so many times our veterans don't feel like they fit in any longer. I mean, even going to boot camp or basic training changes a person, as you all know. And you come back and you can't relate to those around you. You can't relate to your buddies that you left behind or your family members because they have never experienced what you have experienced. So how do you do this and do it in a way that is effective? So that's that book. And the third book is called, Souls Under Siege. Yes, Souls Under Siege, The Effects of Multiple Troop Deployments, and How to Weather the Storm. So never before have we ever seen so many troop deployments. You know, when the wars first started, they were going on, you know, four, five, six, some more than that, deployments. And they're so used to being gone all the time. Excuse me, I have to go get a drink of water, okay? You guys,
Barbara, go ahead and get a drink of water. For our listeners, Barbara's website is on our Blog Talk Radio. It's BridgetCantrell.com. I'll also add it to the show notes on the Hadit.com forum at community.hadit.com. Her books are for purchase, and they are available from her website. I'm not sure if they're carried on Amazon or not.
I'm back.
Okay.
Okay, so the next book is The Souls Under Siege, The Effects of Multiple Troop Deployments and How to Weather the Storm. So like I was saying, never before have we seen all so many multiple troop deployments. We know we saw in Vietnam they could re-up, you know, for a few months or sometimes did two tours or whatever. But these these guys and women have gone on some multiple troop deployments. And how does this affect your family and your relationships and your children? And so this one is more like, how is everybody affected by this? So we look at the families and how do we talk to our children about a parent coming home from a deployment and they're not quite the same, or they don't want to have the kids crawling on them and get too close. So how do we deal with all that? So this is a lot about families and how they're affected. And the most recent one is Through the Woods, Over the Hill, The Aging of America's Warriors. And that's a book about what do you do after you get out of the military? You're either retired, you're medically retired, or your time is up and you're going into another phase of life. What do you do when you take your uniform off? How do you do this so that you come into another sense of meaning and identity? Because, as you know, going in the military and doing all the things a military person does, it's maybe a short stint in time or it may be a career, but it has such an effect on their lives. It shapes the rest of their lives. So how do they deal with that when it's time to hang their uniform up on the door and say, okay, I'm done. I've got to move on from here. So that's the latest book. That's talking to the people who are getting to the point where they're at the phase of their life that they need to move into the latter part of their lives. And we're seeing a lot of that with, excuse me, some of our Vietnam vets. You know, they're getting into their late 60s, 70s, and they're starting to have health issues and all of that, all of those types of things that are associated with some of their service related activities and exposures to toxins and all of that. So how do we do that gracefully? So those are my books, and they're available on my website, and they're also available on Amazon.com as well.
I've added those books to our discussion forum topic on this, and I've also added a link to your website on our Blog Talk radio page. So if anybody wants to check those books out, they're available at BridgetCantrell.com. That's B-R-I, G as in golf, E-T-T as in Thomas Tank.
Nope, that's wrong. It's Bridget, B like boy, R-I, D like David, G like George, E-T. So it's like bridge with a T. And then Cantrell, C-A-N-T-R-E-L-L.com.
BridgetCantrell.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry about that, Bridget.
Oh, no, that's okay. I just want to make sure they can get to my website. So thank you so much for doing that.
Sure thing. Gerald, give them that phone number again if they want to call in.
Okay, the number, folks, if you'd like to call in with a question or a comment, the number is 347-237-4819. So if you have a question or comment, please call in. The number again is 347-237-4819.
One of the things I want to mention, too, is, as we all know, the sleep is one of the most affected things that we deal with, right? The poor quality sleep, the nightmares, the distractibility, maybe night terrors, sleep apnea, you know, from everything that's happening. So sleep is really important, and I really urge people to try to find sleep wherever they can. I mean, you know, some know that they're even afraid to close their eyes because of what they're going to see. I just always say, you know, if it takes sleeping on a couch because it feels safer, it's covered with three sides up against the wall, you can see the entrance and exit of a room, then go for that. Or if it's outside where you don't feel confined. So sleep is one of the major things that I think is so important, that if it's not working well, then, you know, it affects the cognitions, the ability to concentrate, and memory problems occur, and all of those types of dysfunctions in terms of anger and irritability. So sleep is a primary that I think needs to be addressed.
You're absolutely right, Bridget. You know, have you seen those heavy blankets? They're
no.
like extra heavy blankets that
no.
some people are using to cover up with. They're weighted.
Wow.
And it's helping some people get some sleep.
I would imagine that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's weighted like a lead apron that you would wear at the dentist, you know?
Yes.
And that's given some people some help.
Oh, that's wonderful. That I have to look that up. That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, weighted blanket.
Wonderful. I'll look that up.
A plush blanket. One of them real soft ones with the comforters over them.
Mm-hmm.
They work good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some people need that extra weight to feel secure. I don't
yes.
know what it is about it, but I know that when I go to the dentist, if I'm having a lot of anxiety, which I usually am, I ask them to put that lead apron on me, even though I'm not getting x-rays, just when he's doing dental work. I don't know. That feels
yeah, that's
more
great. You know, it's kind of like, what are they, swaddling a baby, right? You just tighten
right.
them in there and they feel so secure and safe.
Yeah.
Quiet
it's,
them
it's,
down.
It's
I guess, and you know,
that,
when
yeah.
you get triggered, you're not, your body is just totally overstimulated. So that's why we do grounding things, grounding work. So that's a way of grounding, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And I think poncho liners are really amazing, too, myself. And I'm sure the vets are going, oh, brother. I go, well, I've got a collection of those, and I like those poncho liners. They're comforting to me.
Well, I know the Army guys are fond of their woobies.
That's right, they're woobies. I found a Vietnam woobie. Actually, when I was at Garmisch in Germany, I went to this little junk store, and he had all these boxes stacked up to the ceiling, and I saw this camo little poncho liner. I go, oh, my gosh. I go, is that for sale? And he goes, yes. And I go, oh, I'll buy that. So I have a Vietnam poncho liner and some other ones, too. So
that's
you know, whatever
yeah.
works, right?
It's just, right, whatever works. If sleeping mm-hmm. on the couch works. I did for decades.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, that's so common. And I think it's probably, from what I understand, people, and I love sleeping on the couch, too. It's safe. It's covered on three sides. You don't feel so vulnerable. And it's if you're kind of reminiscent of your rack, you know, your little cots that you sleep on. Or
right, and you're out in the middle of the house.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So you can see the front door.
That's
you,
right.
Depending on how your house is shaped, you can see both doors.
That's right.
And a lot of times
it's good positioning, isn't it? A good
right.
vantage point.
Right. They need right. to sleep during the day. They can't sleep at night. They need to be awake at night.
That's right.
I mean, I had an alarm system put on my house, and I have locks that automatically lock themselves if I forget to lock them. And that's just been really great because now I don't get up several times through the night to double check to make sure the locks are locked.
Yep, I agree with that. And you know, having dogs is wonderful. I have two Aussies.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like alarm systems.
Oh yeah.
In addition to my alarm system and my motion lights and all of that stuff and whatever
right.
else I have, but it's just whatever it takes to make yourself feel safe. Is very, very important. And so many times that's what stripped away, especially I think with military sexual trauma survivors, that sense of safety is stripped away and that vulnerability. So whatever we can do to provide a sense of personal safety is very, very important.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, and just because sleep is so important. Insomnia can lead to all kinds of craziness.
Mm-hmm, sure can.
You know.
Not conducive
so,
to having good quality relationships.
No, it's not. including with yourself.
That's right.
Well, now, would sleep apnea come in there along with PTSD?
Absolutely. Well, you know, there's so many different aspects of that, but, you know, we see oftentimes, I had a woman in the other day, and she's a beautiful, trim, she's a veteran, and she's a nurse, and she went in to have a sleep apnea test. They did a sleep study on her, and they said, well, you know what, you're not an overweight male, so therefore you don't have sleep apnea. Well, that wasn't true, of course. So those stereotypes are out to lunch, because people can have sleep apnea, and that does affect how they function, because they're, however many times they stop breathing during their sleep cycles within a certain period of time, certainly affects the oxygenation of their blood, their cognitive functioning and everything, and certainly the quality and the depth of their sleep. So getting a sleep study is really important. And if a partner tells you, well, you snore all night long, well, maybe it's time to go in and get a sleep study, because there could be a reason why you're snoring, and it could really be affecting the quality of your life on many, many levels.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're improving these CPAP machines, and they're doing BiPAP machines and all sorts of stuff. So I think sleep studies are really very important, especially for the vets, because it's available through the VA. I would take advantage of that.
Oh,
and there
absolutely
is a high number of PTSD vets who also have sleep apnea. I don't think they
mm-hmm.
really know why, but it's a fairly high number.
Yes. You know, and that would be interesting. You know, it could be diet. It could be all sorts of things associated with that.
I think it's some sort of nerve damage. With PTSD, you're going to have nerve trauma of some sort, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow some of it could become permanent and therefore runs into sleep apnea. Different forms of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know on myself, which I've done away with the CPAPs, and they give me a ventilator. I use a ventilator instead of a CPAP, and boy, it's a cat's meow now. It works great.
And then you've seen the quality of your sleep improve and all of that.
Oh, absolutely, without question.
They do. They have a high prevalence of sleep apnea, veterans do. So it's on the top of my list when I want my vets to go check out their, you know, how are they feeling? How are they functioning physically? Well, let's go get a sleep study. And, excuse me. How are they functioning? And maybe we need to get a sleep study done and talk to their primary care physicians about getting that done.
I think that should be one of the first things you start checking out is sleep apnea.
Well, and you know how sometimes we, with the Agent Orange exposure, there's ischemic heart disease and all of those presumptives that are related to Agent Orange exposure. And so cardiovascular disease is certainly affected by sleep apnea as well.
Yes. So
now
really,
we know that the,
go ahead,
we know
John,
that the regional offices have actually declared war on sleep apnea or not. This has happened in the past several months. They've actually lumped the sleep apnea ratings in with lung ratings. And so instead of giving a separate rating for sleep apnea, they look at your other ratings for your pulmonary conditions, and they rate it together. They said now if you have sleep apnea and an existing lung condition, they call it pyramiding, and you can't get rated for either one of them.
Whether or not you get rated for sleep apnea or not, it's very important to address it so that it can improve the quality of their lives too. So, yeah, that's an interesting topic, isn't it? How they're lumping things together and all of that.
Yeah, well, it's, yeah. There are also, I think Dr. Bash was saying the other day that they're rating people for sprains and strains rather than arthritis, because arthritis later on gets worse and increases the rating. But, of course, it's very hard to prove any of this stuff.
Well,
right.
Actually, the rating, for example, on muscle system, you know, say you get a neck injury in service and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have your test done and your MRIs done and they start looking at you and doing your exams and they see you've got a lot of nerve issues, you know, like maybe your hands and your arms or shoulder or whatever's having deficits.
Mm-hmm.
They've got two rating schedules. They've got an IVDS rating schedule and they've got a traumatic arthritis rating on the schedule. Under invertebral disc syndrome, the IVDS rating is just a disc. It's soft tissue. And so that's what they're getting at. They're putting more ratings that way because the maximum rating for that is 60% versus their traumatic arthritis rating with the deficits could be 100%. So that's what they're doing.
Interesting.
Yep.
Well, it's good to that would be a great thing to be talking about is the difference, the rating decisions, and what gets rated and what doesn't. And
well,
you know,
the VA appears to continually try to narrow down or group some of these ailments together to where they used to rate them separately. Now they're getting them together, and I think it's unfortunate for the veteran. It's same thing as they someday they'll come up and say, PTSD is in the same group as traumatic brain injury, and which we all know that it's separate. Matter of fact, I think they've already tried to do that, haven't they, John?
Yes, they have. I advise any veteran, any advocate that's listened to the show, keep an eye on the Federal Register because that's how they do their changes. They try to put some sneaky stuff through there, and if there's no comments on it or anything like that, then it becomes law. So it's a That's their back door to getting this stuff through. So people need to keep an eyeball
on
it.
And on the mainhadit.com site, I post all the Federal Register announcements that have to do with the VA. If you go to hadit.com and the menu, it says VA Federal Register. And if you click on that, they're posted daily. Anything that the Federal Register posters that has to do with the VA is on there. You can read through them, comment.
Yeah, you can actually comment to those. You can voice your opinion or if you object to something. Because they will make some of this stuff laws, and if they don't get enough feedback, they go ahead and do what they want to do.
You know, Bridget, I know we only have like a couple of minutes here, but I meant to ask you if you wanted to mention your work with Hearts Towards Home.
Oh, sure. I have a nonprofit called Hearts Towards Home International, and I put it together in 2004, and it's specifically for working with people who have been traumatized, and I write my books, and I do workshops, and all of that stuff. So it's to support our veteran community and their family members.
Very nice.
And that can also you can also get there from my website, BridgetCantrell.com.
All right.
So you can take donations or whatever there, and
oh yes, I can, and they'll be issued a letter of donation for their tax returns. And what happens is I donate a lot of books. I get calls all. Like last night, I got a call from a man who was in a treatment program in Illinois, and he had read my Downrange book and. He was telling me how it had saved his life. If he hadn't had that book, he would not be here right now. And I mean, those are the kinds of things that I have that happen at nighttime when people call me. You know how it is. Things kind of come out at night, and people will contact me. And I'm sending him a set of books, and I have another woman I just met last week. Her brother had stepped on a landmine in the first Gulf War and severely damaged his leg and traumatic brain injury. So I'm sending her books to distribute to her brother and some. So that's what I do with this money. I put it to work. It is going out back into the veteran community.
That's wonderful. Thank you for what you're doing, Bridget.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's such an honor. I can't tell you how much it means to me to be where I am right now, where I am working with veterans and helping them in certain ways. And actually, just on a side, I just got my real estate license too, because I thought, okay, I can help veterans get houses, and I can keep them from getting hurt by predatory lenders and all this stuff. So I'm wanting to help veterans and make their dreams come true and get better with their PTSD and their traumatic brain injuries, and, you know, improve the quality of their lives and their relationships, and just honor them for their sacrifices, because I wouldn't be sitting right here right now if it weren't for my veterans. So thank you so much for all you guys have done. And I use that as a gender-neutral term for females and males, but it's such an honor to be able to be there when I can to return the kindness.
Oh, that's great.
Well, Bridget, I want to let you know it's been a pleasure to have you on, and certainly hope we can get you back on.
I would love to come back. I really so enjoyed this time with you guys. I very much appreciate that time. It's been a very interesting conversation, and stimulating and inspiring and everything. So thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you for what you've done. It's really appreciated. And I want you to know, had it and Teresa there, she's done such a wonderful job with Haddock. I know she appreciates your input, and we're going to look forward to having you back on, because
all right,
we have so many veterans, and a lot of them traumatic brain injury as well as PTSD veterans. And I know this, you know, these kind of shows will certainly come in handy to them, and help them, let them know, and give them hope.
Absolutely, and they're not alone in this process. And there's so many resources, like Teresa was saying. There's so many ways to find your way home, literally, by something you enjoy doing, you know, whether it's being with the horses, or it's volunteering, or it's, and you know, starting a rap group with other veterans, or reaching out to elderly veterans, or anything that a veteran can do to make them feel like they're connected and have meaning and purpose in their lives again is vital to the process of healing.
Well, that's all right. Well, with that, T-Bird, we appreciate you being here.
Sure thing, Carol.
And John, appreciate you being here. I think this will be it. This will be Gerald Cook signing off for now.
You've been listening to the Haddock.com Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by Haddock.com. All opinions expressed here are the opinions of the individuals appearing on the show, and enough the opinions of Haddock.com or Blog Talk Radio. Tune in next time for another edition of Haddock.com Blog Talk Radio and the Ask Bassler Show.